tonight. I'm showing us live. Guys, hello, welcome to the Untold History Channel. And take two of talking to the Colonel about Gladio Part 4. I'm just going to, before I really jump into this thing, make sure that this is functioning properly. God, it says we're having trouble streaming to your destination. It's possible the stream was ended or deleted, so it's not working on your end. Why don't we... let me give you my link. I'm going to text this to you, and then you can, I don't know if you want to put it in your Twitter or whatever to get people to come over, and then you can just, we can take this, download it, and then you can upload it as a copy after the fact.
Yeah.
Is that work? Will that work for you?
That's fine.
Okay. I want it to work for you, but if it's not going to work on Rumble, then I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I don't know. That's so weird. I'm not getting any error messages. But
here, let me show you my screen, and you can see what I'm talking about. It's going to be. So when I come up here and I click this, you see right there where, on the upper right-hand corner where it says we're having trouble right here. It's probably small.
Yeah, I can't see it. That's so weird. Guess I'm going to have to figure that out.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, we're doing this technical difficulty stuff live, but we're just trying to figure something out. So apologize for the delay, and we will get started shortly. This is the error message that I'm getting. I just sent it to you so that you don't have to like strain your eyes. And okay. Guys, anybody who likes that the intro song that I have on my that's a Pink Floyd "Great Day for Freedom." Kind of ironic that. About the Berlin Wall coming down. Very ironic that we're working with, you know, that with the topic of hand.
So you sent me that on messages.
And let me send you the.
Yeah, send me the link so that.
The Rumble link. I apologize. I thought I did that and I didn't. I failed to. Let me. Get that for you as well.
Yeah, and I'll tell him that we're going to send that to him.
Okay, sent.
Okay.
Hold on. Sorry, everybody. I assure you this was not deliberate.
I'm going to have to put this down and pull that up because it didn't come as a link. It came as an icon.
Which one?
The one you just sent me. It just came as a big blob. Hold on just a second. I'm going to have to get both these things up at the same time so I can just slide it over.
Yeah, unfortunately. On iMessage, I don't know how to send it to where it's not the big blob.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me look here. What's your channel called?
It's the if you go to untoldhistory.tv.
Untold History. .tv. All right. All right.
Okay.
Sorry.
So All righty, guys. We are so we are live, and you get to watch 5 minutes of just gibberish. But that was method to the madness. So apologize for the technical difficulties. I guess Rumble's kind of having some technical difficulties. A lot of it actually recently, at least in my opinion, or what I've experienced. But that said, there is no shortage of things to discuss.
So instead of doing just kind of a diatribe of Operation Gladio information, I thought we'd kind of change it up. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled format next week. But I really want to take an opportunity with a peer to talk about Gladio from a much bigger perspective and how it relates to what's going on today. Kind of more of a philosophical conversation, because what we have delved into is how the flare up in Haiti and the flare up in the downing of the bridge, there's some common, and the terror attack in Russia, there's some common threads that I think needs to be discussed. And people need to understand how Gladio is not just a historical lesson of how awful the military-industrial complex, our governments, and the intelligence networks are. It is a real life, what's going on today. And probably there was no better illustration of that in what happened in Russia. So immediately, if you're wearing your Gladio glasses, you look at everything completely different now. So who are those people and where did they come from? One of the very first things that we found was that several of them came from Turkey. Several of them stopped over on their way to Ukraine and then into Russia from Turkey. Well, if you know anything about Gladio, you immediately, the hair on the back of your neck stands up. Turkey had the biggest Gladio operation in all of NATO. The single biggest, well-funded, it was called Grey Wolves. And understanding that, immediately I'm like, and some were actually in Ukraine, went back to Turkey and then back to Ukraine and into Russia. So that tells me that they went back to Turkey to train. And you find out that the Turkish ambassador during the setting up of Operation Gladio after World War II, where else did he work? Oh, he worked in Rome, which had the second biggest program. And he ran the South American desk at the CIA, which is Operation Condor, where they overthrew every government down there. Uh-huh. So those types of things, if you're going to begin looking into Operation Gladio, those are kind of the things that you need to start thinking about. So what else did we find out? There's pictures of them supposedly doing some ISIS salute, except for they were doing it with their left hand. And if you know anything about the...
Ooh, that's a no-no.
Exactly.
That's a no-no. That's right-handed culture, brother. Yeah.
The left hand is Satan. The right hand is the approved. You do everything with it. And just as an aside, funny story, I'm left-handed and I deployed to Northern Iraq and to Turkey. And of course, every time, because I did protocol with a two-star general, you know, I was responsible for making sure he got to where he was supposed to go, like his glorified secretary, for lack of a better word. It was my job to kind of hold his hand through the day. So,
right-handed, of course.
Because he had, he had all kinds of VIP visits to the local officials, and when they had dinner for him almost every night at different camps, the Italians were there, the British were there, blah, blah, blah. So there's always the Kurdish leadership that was at these dinners. And so I'm constantly sitting on my left hand so I don't mistakenly use my left hand. and offend anybody.
Right.
So those kinds of things allow you to start dissecting. Okay. Then also look at the New York Times article that came out that said, hey, we've got, they didn't use the word Gladio, but they did say we have Gladio units all along the border. And we're not able to defeat Russia conventionally. So we're going to start doing unconventional things. That's literally in that article. And then you have the State Department come out and say, hey, don't go to any gatherings. And you had Victoria Nuland say, hey, don't go to any gatherings. And all of these things add up to there's going to be an operation. And you know immediately. So the same thing that happened in Haiti. So immediately the media starts calling Barbecue a cannibal when in fact he was named Barbecue because his mom used to sell barbecue chicken. And the auspices is that he leads gangs. Well, the gang's defined by who? As you find out, the quote unquote gangs that our State Department is telling us exists in Haiti aren't gangs at all. They are people that do not want the United States involved in Haiti's affair, and they don't want the U.S. installed CIA agent as their prime minister or president anymore. They're not gangs. They are what you and I would call a freedom fighter. They want
patriots.
Yes. And so I thought it would be good to take a minute and do some kind of clarifications on common terms that keep coming up. For example, one of my big pet peeves now is what we call a communist and what we call anti-communist. So if we want to define communist, we need to go and look at what our government has actually called communist in the past. So let's start with Ho Chi Minh. So after World War II, Ho Chi Minh had been fighting with us, right, to expel the Japanese out of Vietnam. And they actually had to throw the French out too. So Vietnam thought that, you know, hey, all this new freedom breaking out after World War II, we're going to get our country back. Not so fast. The French comes right back after they defeated the Japanese. And they want to set up camp again. And Ho Chi Minh says, oh, not so fast. We're going to do a U.S. Constitution. We want our freedom. We've earned it. We fought with you against the Japanese, get out. Well, as it turns out, we wanted the French out too. So we allowed them to fight to get the French out. And then we immediately label Ho Chi Minh a communist and we have to stop him. So we're going to go in and do our Vietnam War thing. And the same thing happened with Lumumba in Congo, right? He was fine until the it came time to for him to control his own uranium, and the Belgium government didn't want him. They wanted to honor their agreement with the U.S., and the U.S. was buying all of the uranium that the slaves under the Belgium colonialism could produce. And so Lumumba says, no, we're going to have to renegotiate all this stuff because I need money to build my new government. It's our first democratically elected government. And Belgium goes, we're not leaving. Our officers are still in charge of your military and you can't renegotiate jack crap. And so Lumumba comes to the United States asking for help to get Belgium out without there being any more bloodshed. Well, we basically tell them to pound sand. And not only did we tell them to pound sand, we actually went in there with the Belgium and basically created a brand new country that had formerly been part of the Congo called Katanga and created the biggest NATO base ever built. And then we assassinated Lumumba after we called him a communist. So we have to literally go back in history and figure out what is a communist? Like literally what is a communist? Because in any scenario that I just gave you, Those people are referred to by the State Department as freedom fighters, except where they have something that we want. Then all of a sudden they're a communist.
It's I think, you know, communist, well, you got to understand marketing and advertising, right? Well, it's so what they do is they make a, they cultivate a catchy term, and then they brainwash everybody into believing that term, and it represents certain things. So now you've got the Marxist, you know, Marx, who is a failed individual across the board with everything, doesn't do anything worthwhile in life, but all of a sudden comes up with this masterpiece of documentation. And believe it or not, Marx is the one who cultivated the term capitalism to go along with communism so that they would have the yin and the yang. So, you know, because prior to that, I think it was really referred to as more as like mercantilism. But capitalism really wasn't the term that people knew about until Marx. And then they take, you know, Marx and Engels' work, and then they push it out to the world, and everybody knows about it, right? Well, now, and really what Marx wrote about is essentially the same mindset and ideology that was behind the French Revolution, the Jacobins.
And what's interesting about you mentioning marketing is you would not be at all surprised that many of the OSS and original CIA, i.e. Operation Gladio controllers, all come from the PR community.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be a common thread that, and that's kind of the whole gist of this show from my perspective, is to kind of give people some tools to start looking at things completely different. So in every history lesson, I want everyone now, when they use the word communist, to actually look and see whether or not the people demonstrated any communist tendencies at all. I'm not saying communism didn't exist. I am saying that we used it as a cudgel to basically implement anything the International Syndicate wanted to have happen. They created by the use of the term communist, because then once you vilify them and then you set up the, like you just said, the yin and the yang, so then the yang is going to be anti-communism, right? And anything labeled as anti-communism is immediately good, because I've labeled everything communist bad. Was everything communist bad? No. Nope. Was everything anti-communist good? I would tell you almost nothing was good, because I would ask everybody to go look up the World Anti-Communist League. Look up who created it. Look up what it was used for. You won't be at all surprised that it was originally founded in Taiwan, and we've already made the argument that the Chiang Kai-shek guy that was the world's biggest drug dealer, moved over to Taiwan. And then that's what fosters the anti-communist league. And then when they had meetings in the United States, they were always in Dallas. And Dallas had the big hybrid where JFK gets assassinated. It's a thieves' den of Otto Borzeni connections and connections to the International Syndicate because of oil. None of that is a coincidence.
None of it.
So tying those pieces together as you go through the Operation Gladio and the tying in of the burying hidden societies like the Masonic Lodge, which had basically infiltrated the Vatican, and many of the people that were in the Gladio program in Italy were in the P2 Lodge, the Masonic Lodge there. And then they embedded themselves into the Catholic Church at the Vatican. And then you have the Vatican Church doing all the money laundering for the entire Gladio network until it got so big that they had to start setting up front banks like the BCCI Bank in Pakistan, the New Japan Bank in
Japan,
and the Castle Bank in the Bahamas. All of them bring capability because this monster grew so big that even as big as the Vatican Bank was, they could not accomplish all of the money laundering. So when you start looking at those types of things, everything then becomes a new question mark on how to kind of fine tune your binoculars in re-looking at history and what it means today. So now with our Gladio glasses on, if you go and look at what how Haiti has evolved, most people know that Haiti shares an island with the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
The Dominican Republic and Haiti has had multiple coups led by the CIA. In the Dominican Republic, on near the border of Haiti, there has been lots of terror training camps set up. There has also been UN operations. There is an entire industry there set up as in, that is labeled invisible children because they are, the Dominican Republic is primarily a Catholic, as far as a religion goes, country that if you're illegitimate, you are not entitled to a birth certificate. You don't exist. Those missing all the time. So while people focus on the Haiti child trafficking, they completely missed the invisible children in the Dominican Republic. And it's not irrelevant that they share that border.
Hmm.
So, and just to zoom out again, keep in mind that Operation Gladio is a wagon wheel with a spoke for drug trafficking, human trafficking, and weapons trafficking, and blackmail is the grease that keeps it rolling.
Right.
You have to have all of those things for the integrity of Operation Gladio to work. And that brings us to the whole Jeffrey Epstein and the Diddy thing. Those mm-hmm. organizations operate in order to keep this wagon wheel of all of the other stuff, because obviously that story talks about drugs. How do you get all those drugs? So you see how all, and the human trafficking and the weapons, right? He supposedly had tons of weapons. So there is an intricate network that facilitates all of this. And you can't look at any one story anymore because it, just as an example, when the bridge went down, the captain, which has now been scrubbed off the internet, we had screenshots. The captain was Ukrainian.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
And what's the name of the ship?
I don't know.
Dolly. Like Salvador Dali.
Oh, wow.
Do you know that Salvador Dali has a painting called Broken Bridge?
No, I did not know that, but that's not surprising.
So these kinds of things, when you now, with your Gladio glasses on, you question everything. Know that whatever story comes out, it's never the actual story. Why would the United States government come on the air within hours and say, oh, we're going to pay for the whole thing? Why? Because there is a company that owns that has an insurance company that are supposed to be paying for it. But that would require an investigation. Who doesn't want an investigation? Well, the guy that says he's going to pay for it all. Right?
Of course.
And what happens every time that has occurred in the past is they destroy all of the evidence.
9/11.
Which is why they want control of the site. Because in a normal situation, when you have a car accident, when you have a boating accident, who gets that vehicle? The insurance company. What are they going to do with They're going to inspect it. Who don't have anything to do with it? And so as the minute Joe Biden came on television and said, we're going to spend trillions of dollars for no reason at all, that's going to make your inflation rate go up, to do something that the private sector is supposed to do, your little antennas need to go up and go, that's the guilty guy.
Right. 1,000%.
Yeah. So when you start looking at the Russian terror attack, you had the New York Times come out and tell you that they can't defeat that. Okay. So they've been carrying, going around with the CIA to all of these different underground sites. What does the CIA have a whole bunch of underground sites along the Russian border for? Audio sites. Mm. It's training people in order to do covert missions into Russia. So they tell you about all of these sites. And in that article, they also tell you there's no possible way that we can conventionally defeat Russia. So we're going to change tactics to non-conventional warfare. They actually say that in the article. So again, immediately, I talked to the two girls that I do a lot of research with, and we basically agree there's going to be a Gladio event in Russia. We don't know when, we don't know where, we just know there's going to be. They just told you that. Then that is followed by the Pentagon and the State Department and Victoria Nuland all telling you don't go to common venues.
Right.
Now there's really going to be one, and it's going to be spectacular. And then what happens? There's a terror event. They just told you they were going to do it.
Yeah.
They told you four different times in a news article and by three different U.S. entities. And if you have your Gladio glasses on, you knew that was going to happen. And then you look at how it actually was carried out. It was a music venue. They love music venues. Think about what happened
in Vegas.
In the Orlando, what happened in Las Vegas. They love music venues. It happened in London. So then when it actually goes down, they love killing women and children because psychologically you get the biggest bang for your buck with them being the victims.
Well, that tugs on the heartstrings.
Correct. And this is all about psychological operations and them conditioning you to be terrified to seek government as the answer. So when you start looking at so many of these events and kind of dissecting them, they start having common attributes on how they actually go down as well. One of the common themes is they love doing it around training events. So
you mean when you say that, you mean where they run a drill and then the drill goes live?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. So if you look at the 9/11, there was a training event.
Yep.
Boston
bombing, training event. Sandy Hook, training event.
So there's also international ones that fall into that same category. There was one, and I can't remember whether, I believe it was in Sweden. It may have been Finland, one of the Scandinavian countries, that basically happened on a place called Pleasure Island. There was a training event going on during that time as well. One of the two, whether it was Spain train bombing or the London tube bombing, another training event.
I think that was the Madrid and the 7/7.
Well, this was the one that was on March 11th.
Okay.
The March 11th.
March 11th. They love their dates.
Well, what's weird about that is between I believe it was the Spain one and another, like 9/11, and don't quote me on this, was exactly 911 days between the two.
Mm.
There's so many things like this as you're working through Operation Gladio and the commonalities of these different events. One of their favorite methods, like one of the girls, Bridget, that works with me on this stuff, is it's like a football game, and the coach has a playbook, and he's going to call in the play, and that's going to be the drill that's ran. So one of their favorite football playbook gladio operations is gathering people in town squares, having snipers pre-positioned on building tops, and assassinating all of these people, primarily women and children, and then using that event to, like in the case of Ukraine, overthrow the government, which is what they did. They also did that exact same scenario in Greece and overthrew the government there and installed a military junta. They also did it in Turkey. There was a very similar event to that. And in each case, after the fact, it was proven that they were gladio operators. Right Sector had the building completely reserved in the town square in Ukraine and was the primary weapons firing location.
And when they do that, the reason they target the women and the children is because then the men are going to come in and come to their aid. And then they're going to, it's going to even make it even a more target rich environment. Plus they have the psychological effect of, you know, tugging on the heartstrings of the populace because, yeah. Oh, these are women and children. How barbaric.
I really think it's more the psychological aspect of it. Yeah. I mean, you have people rushing in, or rushing out as anyway, but the aftermath of what they do to, like, we just lived through it with Israel. The harping on, and I'm not saying it's not outrageous, but you see the benefit if you're a twisted Satanist to killing women and children, because that's all that makes the news. There was plenty of men that died.
Right.
Don't matter. You only hear about the women and children, and they know this psychologically, and it's how they manipulate us. So what we have to do is understand the psychological reason they do it and not allow it to affect our response. You cannot have an emotional response to a satanic attack. You can't, because you basically lose the high ground at that point. You are into their manipulation. So when you start looking at, with the Russian one, just as a side note, that facility, when you translate the English name that's not in Russian on a Russian building, it means eye, and like you're punching somebody in the eye. And that building is where Trump had the Miss Universe pageant in Russia.
I'd heard that, yeah.
So it was not a random location. And the fact that they got all of the people that were involved into Turkey for training leading up to the event and then redeployed them to either Ukraine or directly into Russia, they had already been in that venue, basically scoping it out, and then come back and commit the terror attack. So what's very interesting about it and telling to me is Erdogan's response is he has went all through Turkey destroying what has now been revealed as gladio training camps. And more than likely, it was with Russian intel as to where those people were known to have traveled. So that's.
I wanted to show something for people so that they can get an idea of the proximity of just kind of what we're talking about here and how important Turkey is to a lot of this stuff. Let me share this here. It's a big deal because of how where Turkey is. Okay, so Turkey is right here, right? Moscow's right here. Now, from a distance perspective, that's let me see here. Distance wise, that is let's say, is that in miles? But that's meters. Let me change that to miles. So it's about 1,200 miles, roughly, from Moscow to basically Ankara or close by. It's not that far. I mean, it's not that far in the grand scheme. So it's close, very, very close in proximity. And that would be a perfect staging point. And if I'm not mistaken, that's what you're saying, that Gladio has the biggest presence of any place in any other country is in Turkey.
They had, so Turkey has the second largest military in NATO to us.
Mm-hmm.
There has been the most money spent on military in NATO from NATO in Turkey. So Turkey at one point had the largest Soviet border, which is why it was critical for NATO to have Turkey inside of it. There's some other reasons.
And another main thing about Turkey is that Turkey controls the Dardanelles, and the Dardanelles is the tiny little strip of waterway that allows Russia to have access to their warm water port, their only warm water port.
Correct. So strategically, Russia has always tried to be close to Turkey, and NATO has always wanted Turkey to block Russia. So they have always been in the middle of kind of a parents' divorce.
Mm. Good, great analogy.
Yeah. So, and they have played that to their advantage as well in many ways over the course of the decades. But also understand that the Turkish border is another one of those man-made after World War II, fake borders, basically stole Kurdistan and gave some of it to Turkey, some of it to Syria, some of it to Iraq, some of it to Iran, and broke up what used to be Kurdistan. And in doing so, they foment perpetual war. I would argue if you go back to the World War II, and in many cases, World War I, bound with the creation of the initial world government entities like the League of Nations, the UN, NATO, and all of those, that the entire map that was created in the aftermath was for that specific purpose. It was to create the perpetual war machine and allow the people, because think about this cycle. And that's another kind of common theme I want everybody to understand. If I'm a hedge fund guy, because keep in mind, what I refer to as the international syndicate, they all at the time owned a bank. They all owned some major industrial entity like a steel mill, aluminum mill, and that benefited from the military industrial complex. So they benefited financially because they owned a bank. They benefited financially because of the industry that they were in from the military industrial complex. And most of them did all of their business inside of trust, which allowed anonymity for people not to know the extent to which they were involved in all of the areas that they were involved. And they all owned an insurance company.
You do one of the main things that I think you're missing here, and I don't think it's an deliberate oversight, is the lawyers and the law firms, because that's the kind of the glue that holds all that stuff together.
So, but that wasn't the what I refer to. The international syndicate includes the law firms, but I'm talking about the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans, and those people. So the Carnegies. So they all owned a bank. They all owned something principal to the defense industry. They were all in trusts, and they all owned an insurance company. Now, the like I say, the blackmail is the glue that, or is the grease that makes the things. The lawyers are the grease that makes this all work, right? Mm-hmm. Those things cannot operate as a collective without a lawyer. You have to have the lawyer, the trust. You have to have a lawyer to work in your insurance, and you have to have a lawyer to advise your bank. Blah blah blah. So. Yeah, the lawyers are intricately involved in all of this. You're absolutely right. And, but think about this. If I was going to set up the perfect scenario after World War II, I would create something in the State Department. I don't know, maybe like USAID and maybe like the National Endowment for Democracy. And I would fund that with taxpayer dollars. And I would use those entities under the auspices of the U.S. government, along with the CIA's paramilitary force called Gladio. And I would, wherever I decided, let's just say today I'm going to go coup Chile, right? So as the international syndicate and the people with the hedge funds, I'm going to short everything in Chile because they're about to get smashed. Their democratically elected president's going to get overthrown. So now I have advanced knowledge because I'm involved in the NED and I'm involved in the USAID and I'm involved in the CIA. So all of the international syndicate that uses those entities, they are the ones in potential orchestration, if not collaboration, saying, okay, I'm going to pick Chile today. So that's going to be the coup government. So here's the plan on how I'm going to go in. I'm going to use the National Endowment for Democracy to destabilize the thing. I'm going to fund this guy versus this guy in the USAID. I'm going to beef up the CIA entity, and I'm going to put the Gladio operators on the ground, and all hell is going to break loose, right? So now I'm going to financially benefit from that. And during the installed dictatorship, because I bought him, I've already paid for him, I'm going to have access to all of their resources. So I'm going to benefit a second time. And then when I decide I have no longer use for that dictator, I'm going to go in and purchase all of the destroyed companies that he has destroyed in the last 10 years he's been dictator. And I'm going to put U.S. Entities in their place. I'm going to buy the bus station. I'm going to buy the cable companies. I'm going to buy blah, blah, blah. Right. So now I'm financially benefited a third time by having destroyed and killed hundreds of thousands of people.
Right.
So do you know why George Soros is so rich now?
What you mean, because of how he deliberately crafted the collapse of the dollar or the pound?
But he's been involved in all of this. He's been involved in the National Endowment for Democracy. He's been in. You think he doesn't know what government we're going to coup next?
No, hell no. So he's probably in on the planning phases of that stuff.
So let me just say that after we destroyed the Russian czar by assassinating him with the Bolsheviks, which we funded, by the way, as with UK and all of them. All right. So we knock him off and we install the puppet government of the Bolsheviks and they kill millions of people. And what happened immediately in the aftermath of that? GE went in and electrified all of Russia because the Tsar would not allow him in before. And you have the JP Morgans and the Rockefellers. They all go in and the Carnegies and build all the railroads. So they are using the Tsar's gold. They're being paid in Tsar gold in order to do all of this. So they financially benefited by all of that. And then move fast forward to now you have the Soviet Union. They've decided that they no longer need the boogeyman. They've already established communism is bad. So it's kind of went its course. So now based on my model, what would be the next thing to do? Whether they're going to go in as soon as they destroy the dictator, they're going to go in and buy up all of the resources, or as the dictator's leaving, right? Well, right. What happened? Dang, if Bill Broward didn't go in with Sabra's money out of the Hermitage Fund and start buying up all the Russian companies. And we were led to believe that Bill Broward was the good guy and his lawyer friend, to your point, that was helping him steal all of the companies in Russia, was supposedly a whistleblower. And we got the whole Magnitsky Act as a result of that, which basically took a bunch of and froze a bunch of assets of Russia, because Putin figured out what Bill Broward was doing, and what Magnitsky was doing was selling out his country, and it was stopped.
Forgive me, I'm not trying to correct you, but is it Broward or is it Browder?
Browder.
Okay, I'm looking it up, and I just wanted to make sure that I've got it right.
Yeah. So, if you look at that, oh, and by the way, Sofra got paid back for his role in the whole thing by being burned alive. Don't know who did that. But nothing about our history has been explained to us in the way in which it actually unfolded. We have been lied to and manipulated all along the way. So they lied to us to get the Magnitsky Act passed, because that is not how all of that went down at all. This international syndicate was going in and basically doing what they did to Ukraine and buying up all of the stuff, creating their controlled oligarchs, and Putin put a stop to it. That is a number of reasons why this international syndicate hates Putin's guts.
Oh, yeah.
There's many, but that is definitely one of them.
You know, it's, and I don't want to get too down on the rabbit hole on that, but I was watching a thing about Putin and how they were talking about how, oh, he was, it was really scary how he came to power, because there was all these little things that, you know, how he was lying and he did all the, the FSB went in and they were like setting bombs and blowing up their own people in these apartment complexes and all this stuff, and they were blaming it on the Chechen terrorists and all that stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, something doesn't sound right with that. And it got me thinking. I was like, you know what? I called a good friend of mine, and I said, and he said, what would you do to wrestle, to what lengths would you go to wrestle control away from these sadistic, satanic fucks that are in control of your country? What lengths would you go to do that? And that made so much sense to me that, is what Putin did to put himself into a position where he could have control of his country. Was it dirty? Very well, possibly. But was it necessary? Abso-fucking-lutely.
But I would also suggest to you what you just described is everything NATO's done. As part of Operation Gladio. So
right, fire with fire.
Maybe some of those things were actual Operation Gladio to blame it on Putin after they realized Putin was going to be the rallying figure. They could
find. Okay. I can see that.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. And that's why I want everybody to understand some of the nuts and bolts about Operation Gladio, because I don't know the answer to that. But what I can tell you is what 100% it's not whatever they say.
Right.
It's up to us to figure out what the actual answer is based on patterns. And I would tell you, based on patterns that I've established, that it is more than likely those things happened in order to dirty Putin up once they realized that he was going to best them. And they've been trying to assassinate him and or coup him ever since. That's what the whole operation was Actually, I also read that that operation was supposed to have happened before the election, because one of the very first things that I said was, that's odd that that terror event happened after the election, because that's not the way they roll. The pattern is it happens before the election. And lo and behold, yesterday I was reading an article that said that that operation was actually scheduled to happen like 2 weeks before. There was some superstar singer, Russian, that was performing at that venue that all of the top officials of the Russian government, not Putin, but many of the others and their family was at that event. But the security was so tight that they called the operation off, and it was supposed to have happened before the election. And that, to me, based on patterns, made perfect sense, because in an embarrassment to Putin. That's the way they roll. That's what they do. And so when you start investigating and you looking and start looking at some of the Operation Gladio methodology, timing, playbook, you can then, like we did this real time. It was like, that's odd that that was done after the election, only to find out a couple weeks later, no, it wasn't really supposed to be after the election. It really did fit the typical playbook. So,
interesting that they're blaming it on ISIS, the Islamic or the Israeli secret intelligence service.
And we've already discredited that, because that was the weird hand where they were doing it with their left and not the right. That's not who that was. And right. It's like they're basing that on a patch, right? That, it really, that's kind of like at this point for me, splitting hairs. Who created ISIS? The intel communities. Who created Hamas? The intel communities. You have to have boogeymen if you're going to do Operation Gladio. Those boogeymen are going to be the terrorists that they create. They created the Muslim Brotherhood. And I don't mean just the CIA. It's MI6. It's the BND in Germany. It's Mossad in Italy. They all use them. Because they want them to manipulate their domestic audience.
I look at the intelligence agencies as, okay, CIA is the American branch. The Mossad is the Israeli branch. The BND is the German branch. But it's like Walmart is headquartered in Arkansas, and they've got a whole bunch of stores all over the place. But they all have a headquarters that they answer to. And they all are working for the same company. And that's basically what you're looking at with the intelligence agencies, as I see it.
What's interesting about that analogy, I like it, is but they still have competition among stores.
Yes.
Be the most profitable store, to have the shrinkage. That's exactly how the intel community works. And let me give you an example. We found out in our research that there was a company that was created called Crypto AG. It produced encryption material and equipment that was sold, much like the Promise software from the Inslaw group, for money laundering, i.e. control. It was sold with a back door. The two entities that had that back door was the BND and the CIA. They did not give access to other intel entities to that information. They used it to extract assistance from other countries. So there is some competition among the criminals.
I'm just looking up here to story on the Washington Post, which is essentially the CIA, the intelligence coup of the century. For decades, the CIA read the encrypted communications of allies and adversaries.
Yeah, so they actually created, the whole reason they were this specific and how it was done was for South America. So, you know, most of the Germans went down to South America, right?
They went, right.
Blah, blah, blah. So that's the reason why the two of them got together. So the U.S. had all of the impetus to want to keep where they were and what they were doing quiet, because, of course, we imported our own here. And Germany, who General Galen was still in charge of the BND, and he's an SS Nazi. So you have Galen in Germany and for a long time, Alan Dulles, and they're best buds. As a matter of fact, some people view the BND as kind of a stepchild of the CIA because So they
if I may just take a little rabbit hole, just take a 30-second rabbit hole and say, guys, if you don't know this, Galen met up with Allied people in I want to say it was like 1943 or 44 in Italy. They dressed him up as an American general and they flew him to Virginia, where he had a meeting with Alan Dulles during World War II.
Well, hold on. Alan Dulles was actually in Switzerland. He was the OSS guy.
Okay. But he met with him in Virginia, though, at that time.
They debriefed and to get approval to create. See, so the whole thing, they dressed him up as a 4-star. They fly him back to the United States. The deal that Alan Dulles made with General Galen was, if you give me your entire stay behind plan, we will allow you to be the chief of intel in the new West German government. That was their deal. But no one in Washington believed he had what he had. So they bring him back to Washington, D.C., and they are both the military, the State Department, everybody. They're debriefing Galen to be able to verify what he is saying on the extensive nature of the stay behind unit. Because keep in mind, at this point, General Galen had put stay-behind units in every Allied or Axis-occupied country, what we now know as Ukraine, Poland, Germany. So they were everywhere. And he had this Czechoslovakia, Romania, Hungary, Yugoslavia, all of it, right? He's got this thing wired. And he was giving them his bona fides to prove that he, in fact, had set this entire thing up. And once they were convinced that what he had was true, and it clicked with them how extensive and beneficial this would be to be able to call up these paramilitary entities that have pre-positioned arms, communication equipment, and blah, blah, blah. This is brilliant, they think.
Right.
So this is their evilness. And mm-hmm. so they then guarantee him he's going to be Adenauer, who is the first chancellor of West Germany, chief of intel. They take him back over there. He completely avoids prosecution, which he should have been hung at Nuremberg. If Nuremberg was actually a thing, it was not. It was all a scam. All they did, like they have done repeatedly in everything Operation Gladio, is they got a few low-hanging fruit on.
You know how many guys got penalized or got punished at Nuremberg, right?
I don't know a number off the top of my head, but I know
it was like 17 guys.
Yeah. Not any of
small
primary guys. A lot of them were sentenced to life, but then immediately it was commuted.
Mm-hmm.
Basically time served as,
right.
Yeah. So, it's just crazy. That, and I correct everybody I see. Oh, we need Nuremberg 2.0. We didn't have 1.0, guys.
Right. It was a show.
They did the exact same thing at the end of World War II in Japan. It was all a show there too. None mm-hmm. of the people, what they did in World War II in the Pacific Theater ever was held accountable. But another important point to make on that is, one of the, because this is another one of those high-arching common themes, when, as far as accountability goes, when we were told Nixon had the war on drugs, he didn't have the war on drugs. He had the war on the Corsican mafia aspect of the drugs, because our five times. So there was never a war on drugs. What they did was get the competition. Once they kicked them out of Vietnam, the French tried to get other sources for their heroin to refine in the Corsican mafia laboratories in Marseille. And when that became more and more challenging, the nuts started getting squeezed harder and harder. And eventually there's an assassination of over 300 Corsican mafia dons throughout France. And the CIA / Sicilian mafia takes over the entire drug trade. And any time in that we have known there to be a quote unquote crackdown, the crackdown occurs at the very low levels. So another good example, we spent billions of dollars supposedly fighting drugs in Colombia. Well, you know what we have today?
Say again.
Do you know what we have in Colombia today?
Yeah, we have an entire organization of schools where they teach Colombians to be assassins, where they go and they use those guys as agent provocateurs all over the world.
Over 20,000. And do you know who hires them primarily?
Well, intelligence.
NATO and the
U.S. Yeah.
They go on NATO missions. And all they are is trained Gladio operators. Over 20,000 of them. And they were trained with our tax dollars.
Right. Now, that wasn't School of the Americas. That was that they actually had like training camps in Colombia.
However, the officers all go to School of Americas.
Right. At Fort Benning.
Which is now.
Yeah, Fort Benning.
Because they
it's not called School of the Americas anymore, but that's that's where it was.
Right. And the irony of all ironies, that encrypted AG company that the CIA and the German BND created was co-located in the building next to the Schools of America on Panama Bay.
Shocker.
The server and all of the capability for all of South America was located in Panama and ran out of that same base. You also notice that when you have the big drug networks that are discovered in America, if you read about any arrest, you very seldom ever read about arrests made of anybody of significant stature in them. And if you do, it's because they've outlived their usefulness.
Gotcha. Hold on one second. Sorry for the distraction.
Sure. So that's why I think it's important to understand philosophically, and that's why I kind of wanted to do a timeout on talking about actual details and kind of zoom out to the 30,000 foot look, so that people can start recognizing some of the commonalities, the common traits that these entities have, and how they conduct these operations and how they apply to real world. So let's get back to Haiti for just a second. If you look at Haiti and the fact that they have $20 billion worth of gold, it's suspected, in the Haitian mountain area. Well, the Haitian constitution doesn't allow for them to dig that gold up. There's no mining allowed. And there's been companies associated with some of our politicians, like Hillary Clinton's brother, and one of them headquartered in Canada, i.e. the UK element, that has been given contracts to go in there and do that. And the locals drive them out every single time. Now, our State Department calls those locals gangs. well, they're not gangs. They're enforcing their constitution because they bought off the police force, who was trained at the Schools of America's successor. So you see what's happening. We get manipulated because we don't have the proper information and don't understand the construct of what's going on. So I have come to the conclusion, every single story that comes out of mainstream media or our government, whoever they're saying is good is bad, and whoever they're saying is bad is good. And if you go with that premise, you are going to be right 90% of the time.
Right.
So in the case of Haiti, where you had all of these resources that they want to extract, what better way to do that than to destroy the country and have them write a new constitution, and then have your people on the inside of writing that new constitution that's going to allow them to mine that area? And if it requires destroying the government, killing a few presidents, and killing tens of thousands of people, they don't care.
No, not at all.
So that's what we were finding out about what's going on in Haiti. And then, like I said originally, they use the other, like the Dominican Republic, as kind of the jumping off point in order to stage different activities out of there. The same thing, Cuba is such a great example of them going down there with the pre-World War II mafia, drug dons, everything, casinos. They destroyed the culture. They were prostituting all of the young girls down there. And you had a rebel force that wanted them gone. Well, the leadership in the United States didn't want them gone. The mafia didn't want them gone. And by the way, they had already started importing heroin through there. And that entire network didn't want them gone because they were using it as a staging place. And so what do? We actually, in that case, funded both sides of the revolution. We didn't know who was going to win. So we're going to give the crony U.S. installed Batista guy money. And we're also going to fund and equip and we trained many of the assets that were on Castro's side. And the CIA literally was living in the hotel next to him. So no matter what, they thought their beds were going to be feathered, no matter how that turned out, only to find out that after Castro won the revolution, he could not be corrupted and allow the casinos back in. He would not allow them back in. Well, then, of course, he's labeled a communist. Yeah. Yeah. So this happens over. And I'm not saying Castro's good. Please do not misunderstand
right.
me. I don't know what is right and what is wrong. And I don't know anything about what was going on other than the fact that we were lied to. He was not a communist. He came to the United States. He wanted help. And when we told him our stipulation of help was going to require him to allow the mafia and us to use it as a drug staging base, he said no.
Nope.
And yeah. they cut you off militarily, economically, and politically. And where are you going to go? It's 1960. The only other country that is exporting weaponry that's going to allow you to protect yourself or has a big enough market to accommodate trading with is the Soviet Union. So naturally, anybody that we cut off that we couldn't coerce was going to go to the Soviet Union for help. That didn't make them communist. That just meant they were interested in the survival of their country. And so our labeling them and brainwashing the entire country that communism is the evil of all evils. And then, you know, it makes you wonder, did they facilitate the annihilation of all those people to make communism the boogeyman that it became, to be able to psychologically use it as the weapon that they did for the next 40 years? I mean, you have to ask questions.
Are you familiar with the website Henry Macau?
No.
So here, I'm going to share this real quick, and I'm just going to read the top I'm read the top like paragraph here and we'll see. Come on, where is it? More evidence that communism is a total sham. Its role is to prevent genuine reform and impose tyranny in a feel-good disguise. Fulgencio Batista, Cuban president from 53 to 59, was the Gaddafi of his day, creating a dangerous example of economic independence from the bankers. The revolutionary Fidel Castro was nothing more than a banker shill tasked with removing him and reducing Cuba to a penury and servitude, no difference from any other U.S. installed fascist dictator. This is a molecule. The full story of Castro is even worse, but eventually it will come out. I'm actually already pushing the envelope. The point is that Castro was on the payroll of Citibank and the CIA from the beginning.
He was definitely funded and trained by the CIA. Now, I had never heard that about Batista, but given what I now know, although Batista was installed a couple of times by the United States, so I'm not sure I agree with that. But the bottom line from my perspective is you can't trust anything the government tells you.
Right. Well, I'm sure you've heard the quote by, was it Colby at the first cabinet meeting of Reagan, when he says, "Well, Mr. President, we'll know that our disinformation campaign's working when everything the American people believe is a lie." Right. And there's a lot of people who say that oh, that's just a fable, that never really happened. And I'm like, I've heard from multiple people that they actually heard him say that.
Just say it doesn't matter whether he did or not, and that's what I keep going back to. We believed everything, and it was a lie.
Right, exactly. Very well. Thank you. The proof is in the pudding, as they say.
And that's my point in all of this. What you find out is so much of the garbage is, oh, well, here, there's a weed there. There's weeds everywhere. Why are you focused on that one? It really doesn't matter that he said it. It's actually true.
Correct.
And that's kind of so. But let me say this, because I think this is critical, and probably we're going to get a storm here. So, but I did want to point out that the misinformation and disinformation movement is embedded in all of this, because one of the things that you find is that there are saboteurs out there to truth tellers that, for example, if I say something is communist or I say something is fascist, I will get swarmed with people saying, if I call something fascist, it's communist. If I call something communist, it's fascist, right? Mm-hmm. Guys, there's actual definitions for this. And don't tell me what one is versus the other. I know what they are, and I know we've been lied to about both of them. So I believe they do that to dilute the actual message. So if I tell you that fascism is behind Gladio, if they think they can argue with me about whether it's fascism or communism, you miss Gladio.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens every single day on social media to people that are telling you the truth. I would tell you, don't get bogged down in the delineation between one versus the other. Stick to the actual overarching point and move on, because those people are inserted into the truth movement to minimize your voice.
Agreed. And if I may, you know, love him or hate him, my humble opinion is that one of the preeminent guys that falls into that category in our world is Alex Jones.
I can't disagree with you there. And I will share one point, but I got to share my buddy since you shared your buddy.
Oh, look at that.
This is my puppy.
He's gorgeous.
This is Maverick.
Hi, Maverick.
Yes. If you're away from him for very long at all, he's got to come check out and see where you're at. So
he's okay, been. So, So you're Sharon Hammond. You're just making me think of my boy that I just love to death. You hold yours and I'll hold mine and we'll be a team.
Okay. So what I will say is this. I've noticed that the people that kind of gather around that, and I'm not saying there's not some usefulness, so don't misunderstand me, but I want to give you an example of something that I've noticed that happens. Recently, with the Russian event, I don't know if I've talked about it on your show, but there was a mentioning after the first time that I was on a large venue talking about Operation Gladio. The next day, it was mentioned by Jack Posobiec. And then it was mentioned the day after that on Alex Jones' show. It has never been mentioned before. Mm. So I don't believe that's a coincidence. But it was mentioned in a way as if to look at it and throw it away. Because not only did he not pronounce it properly, he also said that it was Gladio 2.0. Well, there's no such thing.
Right. He's getting that straight out of, what was her name? Sybil Edmonds. And so, possibly James Corbett.
A versus. So from a military. Okay, so I want to make sure everyone understands. Gladio is a paramilitary entity. It is military in nature. It creates death. It is a mission. It is assigned a mission. It has every trapping of being. If you looked at NATO as a nation, it is its military. Okay. That you have to understand about it. When you change tactics or when you change a labeled enemy, that doesn't restart the clock. There's no A and B. There's no one and two. There's nothing. It started. I mean, for us, in our purposes, it started just before the end of World War II.
Yep.
And it's going on today. The fact that the analogy would be if I'm in the middle of a war and I didn't know that the group A also had a group B and I'm only killing A, but then I find out B's also the enemy and I start shooting over there, then I pretend like it's a completely different war.
Right.
It's not a different war.
No, it's so, just, it's all it is evolution of tactics.
So the other point is, and I'm very emphatic about this, we need to use common language and stop using their language. There's no such thing as a color revolution. There are coups and there are wars. And when a military operation ran out of NATO, coups a government and overthrows it, it's not called a color revolution. It's called a coup. Mm-hmm. People don't know what color revolutions are. They don't know the extent, and it makes it look like you're talking about something in a coloring book. It is a coup. Coup is what everybody understands the overthrowing of a government is, whether it's internal or external. And we have to stop playing their game, because when you call something a color revolution, it breaks the history of the coups that has happened up to that point. And it makes it like it's a standalone only for that one particular military or country. And that's never happened anywhere else. Right? So I'm very emphatic about that. And I correct people all the time. We have to start using common language on our side that we all understand and that brings the history current with a common understanding of what we're dealing with. And I think that's critical.
Okay. I can see that. I absolutely can see that.
So, yeah, now I'm starting to hear the thunder.
Yeah, that's where you are on the East Coast. It's
yeah.
I lived a year in Virginia, so I know. And it's springtime, so. How close are you to where the bridge was?
Which bridge? The Sunshine Skyway?
In Baltimore.
Oh, I'm in Florida.
Oh, you're in Florida. That's right. You told me you're in Florida. What am I thinking? I don't know why I was thinking. Why was I thinking you were in Virginia? I don't know. Brain fart. No, you're in Florida. That's right. You're down south.
There's a lot of gossip about the whole cargo ships and containers and that types of thing. I found it interesting. I ran across a tidbit earlier in looking at the bridge catastrophe, in addition to it being a Ukrainian that was the captain of the ship or the driver or whatever, that the primary focus of, or cargo, if you will, that comes in through Baltimore was they're the largest port importing German cars, specifically Mercedes-Benz. And what I found interesting about that is when you look at the port where a lot of those cars come out of, you have the ones that everybody talks about, like Rotterdam. Yeah. And so I found that very interesting that whatever else cargo may be on those ships aren't going to be going to Baltimore for a while.
No. And when I looked at, there are some out there who say that was that it was dynamited or that there was, you know, that there were explosives put in there. I don't know if that's true or not. It appears to me that the ship, had built up enough steam. And when it collided with the stanchion that was, you know, I mean, it probably collided with that with enough force that it would have caused it to collapse on its own.
So with that, so there's been people that said, you know, you could have switched those lights on and off. That's not how ships work, guys.
No.
So it's very clear that they had what was initially a power failure. Whether it was catastrophic initially or not, the smoke would indicate that they had a catastrophic power failure, whether in the engine itself or the generators that's on board. So it would have. So when you're normally underway, the engine capability produces power in order to run stuff. And then you also have the auxiliary generators.
Right.
When you have a power failure, there's a recycling of, so for example, I don't know if people understand how electricity works. Here's your generator and here's your light. If you have a catastrophic power failure here, it will give you alternate routes because that's all DC. It's going to give you alternate routes. So if your power failure is here and the lights go out, then it has a rerouting because you've not destroyed your power generation yet. So you can reroute, then the lights will recycle and come back on. If your catastrophic power failure is here, then you don't have any recycling because it's gone. You would have the generator lights, but it does not appear that second iteration of lighting, because it was the same as the first, would have been generator, because that's emergency only lighting. So it does appear that they had a catastrophic failure of, for whatever, if it was cyber or an onboard explosion, that they had that. And then the engine tried to redirect and it came back on and then went off again. And that entire time you're seeing the smoke come up, which could have just been an electrical issue, because that's the system that I worked on aircraft. So I know how that works on aircraft, and it's very similar on a boat. So there were some very telltale signs of particular things. So once you lose the power generation, when you're in a channel like that, you will drift. And then it says that they drop the anchor, which is going to make you move in a, like around. Well, that
is can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I did. So when they dropped the anchor, that's what caused them to move. What caused them to veer off course.
Not to go in a straight line. So you're then being pulled along, because now you've lost your engines. You're now pulled along by the current itself. If you're going with the current and the current was going out, you're going to go out that channel. But you can't guide yourself out the channel. You have no ability to use the rudder or anything else.
Right. So
when you drop anchor, you are going to swing around.
No, 100%. I was in the Navy. I was on a battleship. So, I understand the concept. I'm just trying to understand what caused them to have that. Because I mean, when you're going straight, if you lose power and you're going straight, then you're just going to keep going straight for the most part without a rudder. But I didn't realize that they dropped an anchor, and by dropping the anchor, that's what caused them to swerve, because you have a point. You now have a single point of basically of you know, that's kind of like where you're gonna. It's like a radius, and you know, now you're gonna move in conjunction with that single point.
Yeah, they continue to drag that, but you just articulated the fact that you're no longer going to be in a straight line.
Right.
No longer just going to be carried with the current. And had they not dropped that anchor, they may have been able to navigate through those two pylons. I don't know, based on the speed at which they were going already. But the dropping of the anchor definitely played a part. What part? It didn't stop them, and it didn't do a like it would for someone on a small boat, because you've got a lot of momentum once you're coming out.
Correct.
Yeah. So I just find it very odd. And something like that, I mean, it happened down here in Tampa Bay. It's not that you're not going to have things like that. The fact that it happened right as all of the unveiling of Diddy's blackmail scheme happened. Mm-hmm. Makes your eyebrows go up.
Yes. It's like the timing of that. And see, the thing about Diddy is, you know, I've got friends that were law enforcement. And in fact, you know, I think you said you recorded with Alpha, and I did a show with Alpha and Megan Walsh and Nino the other day, where we talked about that. And you know, When law enforcement is going to go after somebody and they're going to raid somebody, they have already been under surveillance for a period of time, and they know everything about their movements. They know what is coming up. They know everything. So for him to be able to get away is, I'm sorry, I color me extraordinarily skeptical. I say bullshit on that. There's no way that he was going to escape. And if I, as I understand it, they stopped him in the airport, and then they let him go. And that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, tying that back to Gladio, that is a typical scenario in Gladio. So the everything that you said is absolutely right. When they don't want the person, so the next thing that will happen, if it would stay true to a Gladio scenario, is he ends up dead.
Right.
So the getting away, if you will, that always happens because law enforcement facilitates their ability to get away. That's part of the deal. And they have some parameters that are placed on them, like you can't ever be seen again. And if they pipe up again, then they're dead. So much of this is very similar. I also, when I found out that it was ran out of New York, also wondered if it was tied to the Anthony Weiner's laptop.
That's interesting. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, that was one of my first, you know, because if you look at the people that are implicated in this, that was one of my first thoughts.
Have you ever seen the Ben Zemkis testimony?
No.
Okay, so I'll send it to you and you can check it out. So Ben Zemkis talks about how he was he had gone to a Nexium recruitment party in someplace in Connecticut around 2007, and the people that he ran into at that party was like a laundry list of people, guys like Eric Schneiderman, Huma Abedin, Anthony Weiner, James Alefantis, the Bronfmans, Stormy Daniels, you know, all these people. And it's like all these people were at this one place, this one, and it's like, you know, that puts all these people in connects all these people.
Had the cell phone that would sync with Anthony Weiner's laptop.
Say that again.
I said Huma Abedin, as in the woman that would have had the cell phone that linked with Anthony Weiner's laptop.
Well, yeah, they were married.
I know.
Yeah.
So that just added to my initial thought of, I'm wondering if some of the information for the actual investigation came off of Anthony Weiner's laptop.
Right. And Huma Abedin's parents were Muslim Brotherhood, which is Gladio.
Correct.
So. The tentacles and the spider web of this is, I mean, it's so monstrous.
It is. But there are fundamentals, and we're going to bring the fundamentals to people so that they can understand the network, and then they can start seeing the patterns. And once you start seeing the patterns, their gig is up.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, and it's the and people need to take this information and look at it outside of the box of how you normally look at information. You've got to completely transform how you analyze information, because if you're analyzing information as though how you were taught at just like school, you're not going to be able to see this. You have to take a little bit of step back and look at it from like more like an 80,000 foot view. That doesn't mean, and when I say come back and look at the 80,000 foot view, in my opinion, that's the same thing as you saying looking at it through your through the lenses of Gladio glasses.
So my recommendation, the thing that broke my paradigms, my blinders, was Paul Williams' book about Operation. And so if there's one piece of literature that you listen to or read, buy that man's book. Mm-hmm. It literally destroys all of your paradigms, because once you realize what they're actually capable of doing, you can never unsee it again.
Yeah, and I'm going to find this here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the link, the Amazon link, because that's where you can get either the book or the audio book. And I'll put this in the live chat right now. And I'm actually going to put that as a comment right now.
It's actually free on archive.org as well.
It is, but if you want the audio book, where that's read to you, it's it's on audio, it's on Audible. That's where I have it so many places.
And I recommend for before I did the first Gladio book review, I had already read like three or four different books to know which was going to be the best one to present it. So my book review that I did of Paul Williams' book on my Rumble channel has woven into it information from multiple books and is also a good source. If you don't necessarily want to read and you want to listen to something, I would recommend you go back and listen to those chapter reviews, because I bring in other authors like Danielle Gansler is another great source.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Of NATO and NATO Secret Army. And he does an excellent job too. And I had read, like I said, three or four books before I got to do the first Rumble book review. And mixing all of that information in kind of adds to the context of the whole.
Agreed. It's like the Apocrypha. Okay, you read the Bible and it's, you know, you get a good information, but if you read the Apocrypha, it's like it highlights certain things and brings it's kind of like the director's cut, if you will, watching a movie of the director's cut. So not saying that the Bible is incomplete, don't get me wrong, please don't put words in my mouth, just saying that when you read other literature from that period, what it does is it expands the it illuminates the scriptures in an even more brilliant way, so that you can understand.
It adds
add context. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to cover today? Because I know you're
mainly. I wanted to give some people some concepts of Operation Gladio, like how they have used communism, and we have to rethink how we look at that. I want people to focus on zooming out and looking at who benefits from things before you start zeroing in on who may or may not benefit from it. I want people to understand how big this really is. Mike Benz talked about how the National Endowment for Democracy had been at the center of so many of the coups. I don't know that he even knows what Operation Gladio is, but I think it would serve him well if he did, because it actually explains, he's focused on the cyber version of Operation Gladio and how they take down messages and that type of thing, and the whole cyber, you know, disinformation garbage. But that is such a small, not insignificant, it's definitely significant, element, right, overarching Operation Gladio. And he just refers to what I call the International Syndicate as the blob. But
right,
other than that, we are absolutely on the same sheet of music. And you know, he was talking about the financial interest of them manipulating these countries via the coups and the different things like that. And obviously that fits right in with what we've been talking about. So I just wanted to kind of put context into all of those different things to help people frame when they hear current news, what's going on.
Yeah. And I would like to add that another really good book to add some context would be to read John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I think that would also help you to really understand kind of the inner workings of how the banking system kind of comes in and does a lot of this stuff. And when Perkins talks about the jackals and the you know, if they're unsuccessful at taking them out from an economic standpoint, then they bring in the jackals and the military. That's when you have to think that's Gladio. So and you know, when you hear information, you hear news stories, and you hear and you're reading things, the three questions that I would ask myself are: number one, who benefits? Number two, who is presenting the story? And number three is, who are the players in the story? Because that will help you to identify. And, you know, it's you have to understand that there's hierarchy and certain people in the world that have They have skin in the game, call it. You know, maybe that's the wrong word, but you know, they're not in this for just for their own, you know, they're not in it because they want to take part in anything good. They're in it because they're going to get something out of it. So, you know, if you watch, if there's a movie that you want to watch, that's pretty good, is I would watch Kill the Messenger. That's a very good, it's a very good movie. It's all about, it's the Dark Alliance. It's essentially the story of Dark Alliance, which is the story of Gary Webb. And Gary Webb transformed. In my opinion, he was one of the pioneers of transforming investigative journalism, because when he tried to present his story about Dark Alliance to the San Jose Mercury News, they went after him, and they made him try to sound, they attacked the messenger as opposed to attacking the message, which is critical. But you look at the stuff that Gary Webb did and how he integrated all the stuff with the, you know, with the CIA, and how they were doing selling the arms and bringing in the drugs, you know, with the Sandinistas and the Contras and Iran Contra and all that stuff. I mean, Gary Webb would be another good read to add some context.
Let me highlight something that you just said to make my point back about language. So he referred to it as the Dark Alliance. I would argue that Danny Casalero, who was also murdered and a great investigative journalist, referred to it as the octopus.
Yes.
They're all the same thing, and yes, it's all Operation Gladio. And so if you do not insist on using the correct language, you have people out there thinking this is all something different. Like Gary Webb was chasing after something completely different than Danny Casalero was, and that what we're talking about or revealing is something different. They're not different. It's all. And that's why I insist on making sure people understand language is important.
Exactly. Absolutely. And you know what? And I don't mean to say this in a way that makes it to be, you know, too simplistic, but you know, I almost everything that we're dealing with today in terms from a standpoint of negativity and bad stories and things, it's almost all Gladio. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's that simple, but it in a way it kind of is.
So my big hesitation initially was, is everything Gladio? Is what? Because every time we turned around, it didn't matter if we were looking at current events, we're looking at past events, we were looking at a historical fact. I'm like, holy crap, that's Gladio. Holy crap, that's Gladio. And I was like, is this Gladio? Am I just seeing that everywhere? Do I just have it on the inside of my eyelids now? But what you find is the premise of what is Gladio and this infrastructure that has been set up to implement the New World Order is embedded in Operation Gladio. And all of the other things, like they try to throw in the World Economic Forum and the WHO and all this other stuff. And I'm not saying that not those things are not important, but not how they're going to do it. They're going to do it by using the paramilitary capability behind the scenes. They are not doing it from the things that you are seeing with your own eyes. It's going to be the things that are basically unseen. But now that we know about it and it has a title, it has, and just like I told you, when I looked at the Russia thing, oh, the New York Times told me it's CIA, then that's potentially Gladio. Oh, they're using non-conventional versus conventional. That definitely tells me that's Gladio. And then we see the terror attack, you know that that's Gladio. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So once you understand how the entire thing works, it completely changes everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's very sick and twisted. And the one thing that you guys got to realize is that when, you know, do you like hockey? Do you like hockey? Do you know much about hockey? Like, I mean, do you know the rules in hockey and what? Okay. I love to use the analogy of the movie Miracle, which was about the American hockey team beating the Russians in 1980 at Lake Placid. I used this the other day, and I'm going to use it with you because I don't think you've heard me tell it. But, you know, the deep state has forever, they have always been on the offensive. And every time they do something, it's like nobody has ever been wise enough to their tricks to understand it. And everybody just says, okay, well, yeah, it's, you know what, it's, yeah, that just must be the way things are. Well, in the movie, up until the Russians and the Americans met in Lake Placid, the Russians hadn't lost a hockey game in like 20 years. I mean, they demolished everybody. Well, in that movie, at the very end, the third period, all periods are 20 minutes. At about 10 minutes to go, what the American coach said is he wants to have short shifts, meaning that getting guys on the ice to play, but only in like 30 second bursts, so that he could keep them fresh. Well, and if he did that, what he could do is he could keep up with the Russians, who were phenomenally fantastic cardiovascular shape. Well, he was able to keep up with them. Well, at the very last minute, typically what you do is when you're down by a goal, you will pull your goalie so that you can put an extra skater on the ice to have an extra attacker, so that you can theoretically give yourself, I mean, it's a risk versus reward. You have to, but the risk is if you don't do it, you're going to, you know, you haven't scored, you're going to lose. The potential reward is that you're going to put yourself with an extra skater so that you can overwhelm the opposition and be able to score a goal. Well, typically when you're down by a goal, you want to pull your goalie with about a minute to a minute and a half left in the game so that you can give yourself the greatest chance that you can to score to tie the game or whatever. Well, that didn't happen. And in the movie, it shows us, they're talking about strategizing. Well, when we get down to a minute left and he pulls the goalie, I want to have fresh legs on the ice. And they get down to the minute, it's the 50 seconds. And the assistant coach looks over and he says, they're not pulling him. They're not pulling the goalie. And Kurt Russell's character looks over and the coach looks confused. The Russian coach looks confused. And he's like, and he says, he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to do because they'd never been in that situation. They have been on the attack for so long. And one, for 20 years, they'd never been in a situation where they were down that late in the game. And so they didn't know how to handle the Russian team did not know what to do in that situation because they'd never been in it. And the point I'm trying to make there, the analogy that I'm trying to make in what we are, where we are today, is that as when we as a people get to realize all of their tricks and they can't pull their tricks anymore, they won't know how to react and we win.
And they make mistakes.
I
agree 100%. And that's why I've made it my mission to talk about this as often as I can.
Yeah. And, you know, and I love that you do because, and you know, it's a passion of mine as well. And I think that, you know, you have touched, you know, Warhamster said this too, and I'll say it again in case this is somebody's first time watching, you know, Warhamster made the very astute observation that all of the stuff that is happening now under the umbrella of Gladio had been happening prior to World War II, but it was being done at the private level, like the you would have mercenaries, or you'd have law offices, or it would be done with like business deals or things like that. But after World War II and bringing in the CIA and bringing all these operations under the banner of the CIA, now what you're doing is now you're giving a government sanction. And now you can get away with so much more because it's government sanction and now under the banner of national security.
Yes. But now we're on to
them. Now we're on to them. But because their game can only go for so long.
Correct.
Right. So anyway, well, we're going to call it a day because we probably should have been done about 15 minutes ago, but we had so many hiccups at the beginning.
Yeah.
We got started late. So any final words there, no. Colonel? None. You can see the Colonel's Substack is underneath there, and you could find her. I'll find a link to her her Rumble channel, and I'll put that in the description. I would highly recommend that you go and listen to a lot of the things that she does. She has some very good stuff that on her Rumble and on her Substack. She's a wealth of knowledge.
I did. My daughter did set up the YouTube. It basically just feeds from my Rumble channel. I don't know how to do any of that. I'm not ever on YouTube, but she did have the point that there are people that exclusively use that. And with it now being in the news, as far as people actually talking about it, if somebody does a search on Operation Gladio and it's on YouTube, we definitely want them to be able to find it. So it's there.
Right.
I don't recommend you use it. I prefer you to use the Rumble channel.
Right. I still use YouTube because I'm a crypto guy, and there's a lot. And I do. My escape is baseball. I love baseball, and that's, you know. But I, hey, listen, I think I've earned the right to have a distraction because I know what's going on more than most.
Absolutely.
So, I've earned the right to have a little bit of distraction. So don't penalize me for wanting to watch baseball. And I'm astute enough to understand the difference between those who run the game and those who play the game.
Correct.
So anyway, on that note, Colonel, very good to see you today. And, I heard you when you were on with, Badlands this morning, you guys are going to do this again next week, I'm guessing. So are we going to be kind of at the same schedule for next week?
Yes, if you don't mind.
No, not a problem.
All right.
Oh, not a problem. So have a wonderful day, and everybody have a great day. And I'm going to get you this video so that you can upload it to your Rumble channel.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. So, awesome. All right, guys. Look forward to seeing you. I may be back a little bit later today, but if I'm not, then I'll be back tomorrow. And because we gotta finish up the Eisenhower book. I wasn't really feeling well last week, so I didn't get to finish up the Eisenhower book. But man, that's a lot of stuff, because Eisenhower was right at the heart of this from a Gladio standpoint. At the from a creation, how it was formed.
Yeah, so. I was bummed out when I found out his involvement in the whole Gladio. It's very disappointing. Him and
do you know who was? Do you know who the lawyer was who was in charge of directing all of the Operation Paperclip personnel from and distributing and making sure that they got to places where, at all points in the United States? Do you know who was responsible for that?
I'm sure I've ran across his name. I don't recall.
Yeah, everybody has. This is called Nixon.
Right. You're right. Well, and obviously Nixon, there was a lot of people that thought he was kind of set up by the CIA, but Nixon has been involved in all of this for a very long time.
I am no longer of the opinion where I used to be this ardent anti-Nixon guy. I'm not that ardent anti-Nixon guy anymore. I'm a little bit more of the opinion that I think he was forced into some things. And I think he might have stood up against the system a little bit too much, which is why they took him out.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because we were reading the Golden Lily book on my right now, and he also gave up control. We had control of one of the Golden Lily trust funds, and he gave it up in order for the Japan to money launder money back to his campaign. So. Mm-hmm. you know, obviously being the vice president under Eisenhower gives him direct knowledge of all of this.
Yep.
So, yeah, not a good look. And
well, and there's a lot of people who think that he helped with Trump, guide Trump, you know, with some of the stuff, like to help him navigate some of the waters that he was in. So who knows?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. It's, you know, I think time will ultimately be the judge, but, you know, we've got to survive what's coming. So,
yeah, on drug was a lot. Yeah. So,
but anyway, well, yeah. Hey, on that note, awesome to see you, and look forward to seeing you again next week at 11:30 Pacific, 2:30 Eastern. So we'll see you guys next week. Have a fantastic remainder of your day, guys.